Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app, see?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hi, welcome to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I am your host, Grant Goldberg. I am alongside Spike Friedman. How are you doing today? Are you excited to get this rolling?
I am thrilled, Grant. I am thrilled to get Locked On Seahawks rolling and back up and running.
Yeah, I know it's been, you know, in the works for a little while, and I'm glad to finally get this thing started. We'll get started with the CJ Procise injury. He's week to week. He's coming off a 7-touch, 74-yard game, by far his best game of the season. So I want to talk about what this means for the backfield going forward, especially versus the Indianapolis Colts, who have been pretty good in the run game so far.
Yeah, the Seahawks obviously squaring off against the Colts this weekend at CenturyLink, and it's a tough injury for them to take in some ways and, like, not a big deal in others. It's tough because the Colts are so good against the run thus far this year, although they haven't played the best level of competition. It's not like the Seahawks run game has been on track by any means. And that means that passing out of run looks would be a great way to deal with a team like the Colts. At the same time, Procise has been good but not great as a weapon thus far this year, and his fragility means that I doubt that the team has game planned in a way where they can't replace him. Carson's looked like a capable pass catcher out of the backfield, so it isn't a total disaster. And really where I think the Seahawks are gonna find their bread and butter is with Luke Wilson and a resurgent Jimmy Graham, so it's not a total disaster. But, like, for you, what is Procise missing, and what do you think Procise brings to the offense when he's healthy?
Well, I think the biggest thing that he brings when he's healthy is his versatility in the backfield, whether he's catching passes or, you know, he's getting those chunk gains. And we saw it against New England, those explosive plays. But, yeah, you know, aside from that, he's missed over 10 games as a rookie, and he's you know, battling that injury throughout the whole preseason. And, you know, just as he starts to look like he's, you know, finally getting it together, he, you know, gets sidetracked again. So the biggest thing that he's missing really is health. And, you know, you kind of, you know, question whether they should have kept Mike Davis and really went with a healthier option in the backfield just for more reliability.
Yeah, although I will say, you know, Rawls and Lacy were both suited up and ready to go last week, and they weren't able to mix them in at all. Lacy ended up with zero carries, I believe. I think Rawls did as well. I think neither of them got a touch despite getting a couple snaps. So there are bodies back there, which is something. Also, yeah, in terms of the health, it's kind of crazy how unhealthy Procise has been. I think he's got 7 separate injuries since joining the Seahawks. He's had a hand injury, he's had an ankle, he's had a shoulder injury, he's had a hamstring injury, he's had other injuries. He's had so many injuries I can't count them. It's actually 6 separate injuries, a groin injury. So, yeah, I mean, as much scheme versatility as he brings, as much as we want him to be our sort of Christian McCaffrey X factor, I doubt that Daryl Bevell has lean too heavily into the playbook in that way, given that at this point he knows that it's just like a huge potential issue constantly that CJ Procise will not be playing.
Right. And I think we've been kind of infatuated with the idea of what CJ Procise can bring to the table. And, you know, we kind of have to look at the reality of CJ Procise and him not being available. And it's good that we kind of have that depth that we can lean on with Rawls and Lacy. But, I mean, in the games that Lacy has played, he hasn't really gotten going. And and Rawls didn't really get very many carries in his debut or against the Titans. So it'll be interesting to see whether they can kind of get the ball rolling as a group against the Colts.
Yeah, and it's a bad matchup for the running game. And so hopefully, and this was something we saw down the stretch against the Titans when the Seahawks were really clicking, the accuracy of Russell Wilson down the stretch can be what keeps the chains moving against the Colts, a team that's really vulnerable to the pass. That said, I think the other big injury question heading into this week is Doug Baldwin.
Yeah, it's a groin injury. He's kind of day-to-day. He's on track to play. He was limited yesterday, if not held out. So it'll be him going up against Vontae Davis, who's making his debut this season, and he was also battling a groin injury, so it's kind of the battle of the nether regions going on in the secondary. So, you know, Vontae Davis, by all means, has been a good corner in his tenure in Indianapolis, but, you know, the factors of the rain in Seattle, the rust that he'll have coming into this first game of the season, and kind of shaking off that injury that he's been dealing with.
Yeah, I'm watching Doug Baldwin on Sunday, especially in the late third, early fourth quarter. He's so good. He is so valuable as a route runner. You watch him create space out of nothing, giving Russell Wilson options on plays that are otherwise garbage. He's so good when he's on and healthy, and especially against a team with a really mediocre safety pairing. You know, like, I will say, obviously, the Colts have a guy in Malik Hooker who could be very good at some point, but he's a rookie safety.
He's a rookie right now, exactly.
Yeah, as good a prospect as he is, he's not going to be able to take away the middle of the field from Russell Wilson, and especially a guy like Doug Baldwin, who's so savvy that, like, if Baldwin is healthy and if he can get out there and run routes the way that we know he can, I just feel like he can be the running game. He can pick up 7 to 10 yard chunks at such a high percentage, especially when Wilson is on, that, like, if that pairing clicks, Colts don't have a chance.
No.
Like, they just don't have a chance if that pairing can click.
And the thing is, I don't think there's any two players as synced up as Russell Wilson and Doug Baldwin when that scramble drill kicks in, and it comes down to finding that open spot on the field and knowing where the quarterback is and being able to, you know, have that communication without, you know, words to pick up these first downs. Like, you give the ball to Doug Baldwin on these mid-level routes and he sort of, you know, kicks into Golden Tate mode, except in a way more efficient way, to where he finds the open spot on the field and he just hits that hole. And, you know, he spins around a little bit, he does his little jukes, but he always pushes forward to, you know, the yard markers, whereas Golden Tate would just kind of, you know, do his thing, run laterally, and eventually get tackled, you know, a yard or two behind the first down marker. So,
yeah, I mean, look, yeah. Golden Tate turning around and running backwards was not anybody's favorite experience
Lee's favorite experience when he saw Golden Tate turning around and running backwards.
Yes, it's mad. No, but yeah, I think that Baldwin, because you said, like, they're the best pairing in that way, and my brain was immediately like, oh, my, Seahawks hyperbole. But then I'm, like, thinking through it, and I'm like, as good as Julio is, it isn't in those scramble drills, obviously, because
exactly.
Matt Ryan isn't doing that. It, you know, Edelman and Brady isn't a thing right now because Edelman's not playing. Rodgers doesn't have that sort of relationship with anybody on the team. The closest is Randall Cobb, but Randall Cobb doesn't catch the ball the way Baldwin does, and he doesn't run routes as crisply. He's a more versatile weapon, but it isn't the same thing. And then the last one that popped in my head, and it maybe is a better comparison, but, like, who cares, is Antonio Brown and Ben Roethlisberger. But if the only example of a maybe better pairing involves Antonio Brown, that says how good Doug Baldwin is in that specific phase of the game, because Antonio Brown's the best wide receiver in football.
Right.
I
try to keep the hyperbole out of it, but, you know, you can't help but think, you know, this is, you know, one of one that we're seeing right now. I think the only thing comparable that you brought up was, you know, Aaron Rodgers and his receivers. Like, there's not really one. I think the closest comparison to that is when you know, Aaron Rodgers draws someone off sides and Jordy Nelson immediately, you know, finds open spot, gets open and, you know, puts six on the board as we saw week one against the Packers.
Yep. So, and that's a bummer. I'm not a big fan of that play.
No, personally. I didn't have a good time watching it.
Not my favorite play, watching Jordy Nelson up against Bobby Wagner and Earl Thomas, two guys who are very good at their jobs, and their jobs are not to cover Jordy Nelson running straight up the field. That's not the matchup you want. Literally, they can do everything else.
Yeah.
They can do everything else, but they can't do that.
Yeah, no, I'm more than fine watching Jordy Nelson on these crossing routes and kind of getting tackled, you know, maybe pick up a first down. But
we're trying to run the red line against Richard Sherman. Like, good luck. Good luck. We've seen Richard Sherman own that pass constantly. But Bobby Wagner, love Bobby Wagner.
Exactly.
Don't want him aligned. Bobby Wagner's good name. Not a great cover cornerback.
No, I wouldn't say that's his best position, but it's definitely an area of improvement.
Can we just real quick rank Bobby Wagner's best positions on the field, like top three? Because for me, I think I go linebacker. Then I think I can see him at safety. Why not?
Oh yeah.
And then I think I would love to see him at running back.
That's the position that went to my mind immediately.
Yeah. Yeah, he's a bruiser. Who wants to tackle Bobby Wagner? Nobody.
I think he might have turned out better than Robert Turbin if he chose to play running back.
You know, speaking of our opponents this week, because it looks like the Colts rookie running back, whose name I'm blanking on right now, is out. So it's going to be Frank Gore. Is Robert Turbin still on the roster? Am I making that up?
No, Robert Turbin's still on the roster.
Yeah.
It's Frank Gore, Marlon Mack, is it who you're thinking
Marlon
of?
Mack is the one who's injured, yeah.
Right. So we're going to see Turbin, who I think scored more touchdowns as a Colt than his whole tenure as a Seahawk.
Well, and wait, so the Robert Turbin comparison is actually really great. I forgot that they both he and Wagner went to Utah State.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Robert Turbin runs a 4.4440. Bobby Wagner's right there. Both around the same size. Wagner's a little taller, but they're both in that like high 225. Yeah, I think there's really, you know, if we really didn't care about maximizing value, yeah, we could have just used Bobby Wagner as a one-for-one Robert Turbin replacement.
Yeah,
come
no,
on, Josh
I mean,
Snyder.
Who needs CJ Process when you got Bobby Wagner?
Yep.
But yep. The thing is with Wagner, his ball skills are pretty good when he's in the area when, you know, he's not getting burnt by Jordy Nelson. I think he does add some value as a pass catcher. You know, you see all
Absolutely.
These interceptions. I think it was a couple years ago versus Jacksonville where he had that insane leaping one. But yeah, I think that Bobby Wagner running back could be an interesting thing to watch in Seattle if the depth chart gets a little thin.
Yeah, fortunately, we do literally have a free agent former Pro Bowler who cannot get on the field right now at running back. So we do have a couple more guys to get hurt before we get the Bobby Wagner running back experience,
right.
But I'm ready for it. My body is ready for it.
Fully prepared. Now, moving on to a different position group where you got guys that played other positions that shouldn't be playing. You got the offensive line, and it's a doozy. We got Ode Abushi, who had his first start against the Titans. And, you know, for all intents and purposes, he might have performed better than Mark Golinski, but the team still allowed 10 hits, 34 pressures, and one sack. And, you know, you kind of just...
34 pressures.
It's not a number that...
34 pressures.
It's a number that jumps off the screen in a bad way.
34 pressures.
It's not ideal.
And the 34! 34! It's not good.
It's really not. And the thing about that, any way you look at it, 34 when it comes to, you know, quarterback pressures or, you know, sacks, anything to do with a quarterback in a negative way, it's not something that you want to read.
No, I'm just like, how many pressures did David Carr have all of last season? Not David Carr, Derek Carr.
Derek Carr.
David Carr had plenty of pressures in his career. Derek Carr, not so many. David Carr's listening to this meeting. 34 pressures. That's just a fucking Wednesday for me. Derek Carr pressures last year. I'm going to look that up while we talk about
it. As a comparison, Russell Wilson attempted 49 passes last week, and he was pressured 34 times.
Yeah. Yeah.
And those were pass attempts. He also had 7 rush attempts for 26 yards. Excuse the sound quality on my mic, because there might be some tears falling into it. Yeah. I'm praying for Russell Wilson every day.
We all are. And again, and I will say that against the Colts, their run stuffing is better than their pass rushing. So I can't imagine that Wilson will be pressured as much, but in order to ensure that's the case, the Seahawks are probably going to have to try to establish the run a little bit behind Odey Abushi's resurgence and Reece Odhiambo on a less badly sprained but still sprained ankle against a really good run defense. So it, as much as like we're going to want a fast start that involves Russell Wilson torching the Colts, if we do that, he's going to get hit in the face a bunch, so I imagine we won't do that, which means that we're going to have another first quarter slog running into brick wall after brick wall after brick wall.
In order to get Russell Wilson going, we need to open with the run game, tire him out, close with the run game, tire him out. I think it'll all come down to time of possession and being able to kind of wear down the Colts.
Although, you know, maybe there's a game theory aspect to this where you just throw because you know the Colts know that we're going to do that, which might be nice. Although playing a game theoretic game with Chuck Pagano, it's pretty much like trying to bring your 3-year-old niece who's only ever played Candyland into a diplomacy type situation.
Right. I'm not playing a Dungeons and Dragons type game with Chuck Pagano in this scenario. So
I do like the idea of Chuck Pagano as a dungeon master.
Yeah,
I feel like given Andrew Luck's stated preference to get hit for punishment when he can't find an open receiver, I feel like, you know, there's a sort of punishment dungeon master situation with Chuck Pagano that I'm ready for. You know, Chuck Pagano probably shouldn't have a job, but if he's going to have a job, might as well be as a dungeon master.
And who knows?
I'm going to stop saying Chuck Pagano dungeon master.
That could be his part-time gig. We don't know Chuck Pagano. We don't know his life like that. Maybe, you know, that's what he's into, but he very well might be better at that than being a head coach of the Indianapolis Colts.
One can but imagine. Oh, my God. I'm just like, I'm just looking at some of the other pressure rates in the NFL. And actually, Andrew Luck last year ended up with a higher sack rate than Russell Wilson. So, you know, there's that.
I think this is a Seahawks podcast. We can't give any information to Colts fans or whoever it may be that gives the slightest inclination that Andrew Luck, you know, is worse equipped to succeed than Russell Wilson.
Yeah, clearly. Okay. Yeah, I will say that, like as bad as Andrew Luck's offensive line has been, it's not as bad as the Seahawks was last year and this year. Even if both teams really only have one competent offensive lineman in their center, in their case Ryan Kelly, in our case Britt, it's just, he's got T.Y. Hilton, although Doug Baldwin's good. No, you know, I'm not getting into this. I won't let it happen.
Spike, we need to have a leash for you to just like pull you back into it. And
I'm sorry, I won't make any more excuses for Andrew Luck.
Exactly. I don't know whose side you're leaning towards right now, and it's a little worrying, if I'm being honest.
Okay, look, I will say that Jacoby Brissett, though, might not have the most elite protection around him.
No, Jacoby Brissett definitely needs more help.
Yes, but Andrew Luck has everything he needs.
Yeah, no, as Farvey as Luck may be at times, you know, he doesn't need that help. He has some escapability, so I think we need to kind of cut down on the Andrew Luck, you know, SOS type situation.
Yeah.
Now I kind of missed the transition with, you know, bad coaches and Yeah, I think Pete Carroll needs to kind of have a shorter leash with Tom Cable, if not, you know, 2-3 years ago, have a shorter leash with Tom Cable. And I brought this question up maybe a couple weeks ago, but would you rather fire Tom Cable or completely scrap the offensive line and bring in new players?
Well, I think that it's profoundly related because Cable wants a certain type of player. If you just scrap who we've got and bring guys in, you're going to get the same type of personnel, or you're going to give Tom Cable guys he doesn't want to work with and guys who won't fit his scheme. Would I love to see Tom Cable working with a better crop of, you know, tackles? Would I love to see him with Tennessee or Oakland's offensive line? Sure. But, like, I don't think he maximizes necessarily those sorts of skill sets. So it's like, well, you're sort of back to square one in that debate where it's like it's basically the same thing. Do we have bad players? Probably.
Yeah.
Is Tom Cable past his prime as an offensive line coach? Probably. How do you suss that out? I don't know. I mean, what do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, as far as track records go, you know, Seattle is consistently, you know, behind the whole league. Now, yeah. No, some of it has to do with the offensive line being valued less than other position groups on the team. Some of it has to do with Tom Cable and his eye for talent. And it's offensive line room kind of compiled with guys that'll punch you right in the mouth. No pun intended, that'll punch you right in the mouth and kind of get in your face, be nasty, but also don't know how to block. You know, we saw them try to execute like a 5-man cut block kind of play, and it just resulted in the most hilarious picture where 5 offensive linemen were on the ground grasping at Titans D-line's knees. So,
yeah,
it, like you were saying, it's kind of like a really crappy kind of circle of life situation that you kind of got going, that question where you know, you get the same result kind of either way, whether you pick a whole new offensive line, you still got, you know, the person teaching them and putting the scheme that they're playing in, and then if you scrap Tom Cable, you know, how do you know just the players aren't terrible?
Well, and it sort of reminds me, I know you're not as big a Mariners fan as I am, but it sort of reminds me of every offensive prospect the Mariners have attempted to develop over the last 15 years that isn't named Kyle Seager. And then, like, you're like, where did it get broken? Like, Jermaine Effetti was maybe not a first-round talent, but he also was, like, a real prospect. Like, he might have been overdrafted by the Seahawks, but... And he is hardly the most of our problems right now. But, again, like, a first-round offensive tackle... You have him immediately becoming James Carpenter 2.0, which is to say maybe a better player than their reputation would suggest, but someone who is not providing first-round talent and someone whose errors are pretty grievous. Like, when you look at Effetti, if you, like, map his performance through the first 3 weeks of the year, if you just watch the games, you're like, this guy is awful. I hate him, and he's awful. And then you, like, watch him play-by-play, and you're like, man... He makes 5 really good. He holds up in protection 5 times in a row, and no one else on our line is doing that right now except for Britt and Jokel. Occasionally can put that together. But, like, no one's doing it as consistently as Effetti is, and Cable's talked about how Effetti's maybe been our best lineman this year. But when Effetti misses, and he misses to the same sort of stuff, which is, like, speed rushes outside, like, easy bend the corner, like, stuff for a good defensive end to pull, he misses badly and he misses fast. And it isn't just that he doesn't hold up. It's that he's not even any more than a traffic cone. And so you have, like, very high variance coming from your right tackle, which is not ideal. You'd almost rather have a slightly less good player, which I guess is what Ibushi is, but he's more consistent in the way that he fails, which is to say it isn't like 5 great holdups and then just a total whiff, and it's more like 5 times where he holds up not quite as long as you like, but at least he's, like, getting his body between his man and the quarterback. So it's like a weird situation where we've, like, got everything's weird. It's all weird. I wish it weren't so weird, and I feel like when we talk about last week, there was a lot of talk that, like, well, the offensive line was better, and it certainly wasn't the biggest issue in that Titans game. But you see Russell Wilson early hearing footsteps and responding to phantom pressure, and I feel like some of what that is was him overthrowing, but some of it was just, it's fucking weird to play behind that offensive line. So,
I think that a lot of the weirdness has to do with the reputation. You know, you say, you know, Ifedi gets beat, you know, by pretty simple ways that you know that he's going to get beat by. And so that's his reputation. And when you see him get beat, oh, it was a speed rush. Oh, you know, he was kind of just a wraparound move. But, you know, when he's on, it's you know, kind of glossed over. And same goes for, let's say, Luke Jokel, because you watch the 49ers game, and he had some pretty bad whiffs, and he got beat pretty bad. But, you know, he also has some pretty good blocks on the interior. And there's a run play where I think it's Lacy who runs through in the Green Bay game and kind of went through the tackles and hit the second level. He spun and could have got more yards, except that spin caused the defense to catch up to him and ultimately tackle him short of the first down. And so, you know, with a better decision maker like a Carson or a Rawls, that play looks a lot better and the offensive line gets praised a little more. But it's the inconsistency that the offensive line brings, so the running backs don't look as good, or, you know, we just, you know, chalk up the play to them just being super bad. So it's up to them just to ultimately be a lot more consistent, whether, you know, it's shoring up, not getting beat on the speed rush, or, you know, not letting guys get inside of you. So it's just the most frustrating thing, because these players like Ifedi, you know, like you said, he has the talent. He might have been overdrafted, but he looked like an NFL prospect, and he has plays where he certainly looks like he could be, you know, worth a damn on the offensive line. But then, you know, you got the negative where it definitely outweighs the positive.
Well, and again, Cable's scheme is also, it's tough to judge sometimes. It's always tough to judge NFL offensive linemen because of the complexity of the scheme. Cable's is particularly complex. And so really in identifying the failure within it is really tough. And there's like a part of me that's like, That both makes him like a major recipient for criticism, but it also insulates him from some criticism, because it's like, well, they couldn't do the complicated scheme. And it's also like, well, the scheme's complicated and it's failing. So it's like you end up with like sort of bland, non-specific criticism, which is to say, like, I don't know exactly why you would do a quintuple cut block. And I don't know why that doesn't work or does work in any given moment. And there aren't a lot of people who do know, but I do know that Russell Wilson getting pressured 34 times is a disaster, and the person responsible for that not happening needs to do better.
Exactly. And I think when the defense starts to get tired out and the offensive line kind of starts to play bully ball a little bit and starts to play that kind of punch you in the mouth kind of style, that's where the offense kind of performs best in that 2-minute scenario, where the defense is tired and you can start to get that push that you need and the protection that you need for Russell Wilson to get the time to make these throws to where he wants to put it and not putting it high. So I think that we can see sort of that 2-minute offense a little more, that hurry up offense a little more, because we've seen more success in keeping Russell Wilson clean when, you know, the offensive line gets to deal with a tired defense. And I know that sounds like a simple concept. I mean, an offensive line that's, you know, not tired out going up against a gas defense is a pretty simple concept, but it's what the Seahawks need to do.
Yeah, and that's actually a great segue. It's a lightning round, one last thing, which is the Seahawks defensive line. There's been a lot of talk about it not being the death row that we were hoping it is. Grant, are you worried about the Seahawks defensive line?
I'm not. You see the kind of caliber of players that are on it, and you see the production that you've got throughout the past couple years. And it's kind of like, you know, kind of worrying over nothing. Sheldon Richardson, as good as he is, it's going to take a little bit of time for him to gel. You know, he was just solely playing 3-technique for a little while. And as he gets more assimilated with it, he can kind of expand his role on the defensive line. You can have that switchiness with him, Frank Clark, Michael Bennett, Cliff. And I think you kind of start to see that murderer's row coming to fruition as the season goes on. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, for me, it's just like the run defense hasn't been there this year, which is weird. But you look at the Titans game and you're like, well, they've got great tackles. It was really hot. We don't have quite the depth that we might want, especially at the D tackle position. But again, as Richardson gets in there better, Nas Jones has been really good. The pressure wasn't quite hitting Mariota from the outside, but also our run stuffs were so good in the first half. I'm like, it's going to take a game where it isn't 107 degrees out, where we got our depth ready to go. So, like, I'm not worried at all. Yeah. I think after the bye week, our run defense is going to click. I think it's going to look really good against a really bad Colts team this weekend. And it's the reason why I'm picking the Seahawks to win this weekend comfortably. It's like a 13.5-point line. And that sounds about right in terms of the margin of victory.
Yeah, I agree. And I think as time goes on, we're definitely going to see those explosive plays kind of come to a stop that we're really not used to seeing. So, I'm with you. I'm picking the Seahawks this weekend. I think it's a pretty safe bet, but you never know.
Yeah.
I mean, Jacoby Brissett might get the help that he needs.
I do want to say that I like the idea of him being Jacoby Brissett, and that we're going to, with our defensive line, keep him on low heat all game. We're not going to blitz him much, get a lot of pressure on. This is a terrible, terrible way to end this first podcast. But I think it's a great way because we're both picking the Seahawks, and I think that's a pretty safe bet this week.
Not yet. We'll slow cook them, and then we'll eat them up in the second half.
Exactly.
And with that, we thank you for tuning in, and you can expect us to be routinely 4 times a week. And yeah, we just appreciate you guys listening, and we'll have more good stuff for you. Thank you.
Yep, pound that subscribe button. Remember to tell your friends about it and follow us on Twitter so you get those updates.
Right, we're on Audioboom, iTunes, and so just tune in wherever you can. Thank you.
What you doing? Ran out of space on my phone, so I'm deleting some stuff. Bye, singing dog. Bye, goal.
I pronounce you.
Bye, wedding ceremony.
Stop. At Metro PCS, you get 2 free phones with twice as much memory.
Really?
Don't say bye to your memories. Switch to Metro PCS and get 2 free LG K20 Plus phones with 32 gigs when you switch 2 lines. Metro PCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. See store for details and terms and conditions.